from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Penny Nelson in San Francisco.
And I'm John Sepulveda in El Paso, where about 30 miles to my east is the site of a tent encampment holding more than 100 teenage boys, all who allegedly entered the country illegally, some of whom were headed to California. Now, there has been a lot of mystery around the condition of the camp, the tent, and life inside. One of the few people to actually see it will share why she thinks federal officials are being so quiet about the first federal tent detention center for minors.
And John will have that in just a moment. But now we're going to go to San Diego County and into another youth immigrant detention center with KPBS's Jean Guerrero.
When we went inside, it was hard to get a sense of what their lives actually look like on a daily basis, because it did feel so controlled and almost stilted in a way.
Did it feel staged?
Yeah, there was a feeling that it was staged to a degree. But I mean, the reason that I say that is because, just for example, the first thing that happened when we walked in was that the Southwest Key representative, he rang this bell, and right when he rang it, all of a sudden, from rooms that we couldn't see, there was applause that just erupted. And he was like, you know, that's what happens whenever we find a sponsor for one of our children. We ring this bell, and everyone is so happy that they've found a sponsor that everyone just claps, all the children clap.
Jean, I know this is a very subjective question, but could you read on their faces a sense of how they were doing?
To be honest, it looked like they were having a fine time, especially when we went outside and watched them playing soccer. I didn't see any kind of fear or any kind of discomfort that stood out to me as alarming.
And how are the authorities securing the safety of some of the younger or smaller kids that are in the facilities? If you've got a 9-year-old inhabiting the same space with a very frustrated and angry 16-year-old, there's a high potential for violence. How are they securing the safety of all of the children in these facilities?
They make sure that every single one of the boys is constantly supervised. So the boys, for example, if one of them wants to go to the bathroom, he needs to ask for permission. He can't just get up and go to the bathroom. And then they're supervised while they walk to the bathroom, and then they have an adult.
How are they doing that? That would require quite an amazing ratio of staff to kids. If we're talking hundreds of kids at these facilities, you know, this facility has 60. I can't imagine they have 40 staff members there.
Right. I don't know how they're able to keep track of every single one of the boys at all times. Every case manager at this facility oversees 8 different boys at any given moment. I really don't know how they manage. But like I said, the tour was very controlled, and we weren't allowed to ask any questions until the very end. So whenever things like this would come up, we would kind of have to wait until the very end, at which point this large group of reporters only had 10 to 15 minutes to ask questions at the very end.
And that was KPBS's Jean Guerrero. We'll hear more about her tour of the shelter for migrant children later in the show. For another look, let's go now to our host, John Sepulveda, in El Paso, Texas. And John, you've been at the site of the first tent encampment to detain undocumented minors.
That's right, Penny. And our listeners can get a detailed look by going to calreport.org. The gist of the story is that teenage boys who are detained there appear to be safe, and the conditions, all things considered, appear to be fairly good. And that connects to something that Jean Guerrero just said about what's happening in California, where reporters are being kept in the dark. Well, Texas State Representative Mary Gonzalez, a Democrat, could not get answers from Health and Human Services. And so she immediately thought the worst. Toddlers under flimsy tents in the hot sun, dehydrated and crying. And I want to make it very clear, that is absolutely not the case. So when Gonzalez was finally allowed to tour the facility by HHS, a question kept popping up in her head.
As I was walking through, I'm like, why haven't they just done walkthroughs with the press? Why is it so hard for me and the congressman to get our questions answered? Like, I was talking to HHS, and I'm like, are there doctors? How many kids? And it was just so hard to get the information. As I walked through, I go, if people had this information, it would change the conversation. My thing is, like, you want people to be scared? Do you want people to think the worst? Because that's what really what you're creating, because you don't want anyone to see this. And so if that's the case, then what is really the goal?
Their agenda, of course, when it comes to border security, is the wall. And it sounds to me that you're saying that they're building tents so that they can build a wall later.
Exactly. And it also distracts from what the kids really need, right? We need to be fighting for ending the family separation policy. We need to be fighting to make sure these kids get legal services. Like, that's what we need to be fighting for. And that means finding them, helping them get legal representation. Here's the other thing. El Paso doesn't have a lot of lawyers. Tornillo, Texas has no lawyers, right? We're talking about rural Texas.
Finally, the things that we're seeing in Tornillo is really similar to things that we see in rural parts of California. Extreme poverty, non-potable water, no emergency services. It's unfortunate that we share those things in common. You were telling me before we began this interview that it would be amazing if this $10 million contract was used to improve services in Tornillo as opposed to this.
So we're talking about one of the poorest cities in the state of Texas. I have been fighting to get wastewater infrastructure so people could flush their toilets. There's been arsenic, extremely high levels of arsenic in the water here in Tornillo. There's not natural gas, there's stormwater problems, people's homes get flooded. Like, $10 million for a 30-day contract to build these tents would have transformed. So I'm like, where are people's priorities?
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for California for caring about what's happening here in Texas.
So, John, Homeland Security offered up a phone number that people could call to find family members taken away at the border, and we gave it a try. After a brief explanation in Spanish, we were put on hold. So we will just go ahead and hold and break into the show and let you know if and when we connect. Meanwhile, let's throw it back to you in hot El Paso, Texas, where the forecast looks for temperatures creeping over 100 degrees all week. And I know there's a tent city being constructed for children separated from their parents at the border. Can you tell us what you're seeing there?
These are industrial-grade tents built on a border crossing just southeast of El Paso. They house more than 100 teenagers, 16 and 17-year-olds. Health and Human Services run this encampment and say these boys are unaccompanied minors. That basically means they were crossing the border on their own when apprehended. But KQED has confirmed with multiple federal sources that claim is simply not true. Lawyers for undocumented children at this tent facility say the federal government is creating the unaccompanied minor situation. How? Well, the federal government arrests a parent and a child at the border, and the parent is sent off to be prosecuted. And at that moment, the separated child is considered to be unaccompanied. El Paso immigration attorney Melissa Lopez says this is stressing an already backlogged legal system.
One interesting legal question is what happens when the government creates an unaccompanied child? Should those children be treated in the same way that unaccompanied children are treated?
Now, because unaccompanied minors are entitled to hearings and lawyers, by classifying them as such, it puts them on a separate legal track in an already burdened immigration system. And it's not just happening in Texas, but according to immigration attorneys, in California as well.
All right. Thanks so much, John. Now from Texas Tent, back to the only Southern California shelter offering media tours and part two of our interview with KPBS's Jean Guerrero. She took a tour inside the detention facility in El Cajon, and she describes what she saw.
We were able to see the different rooms in which the boys were staying, and it's 3 to 4 boys to a room. Each has their own twin-sized bed, and each of the rooms has one bathroom. They get 5 changes of clothing from the shelter, and they keep most of them in cupboards next to their beds. But one thing that I found quite telling was they all had these sketches and printouts, just different illustrations that the kids had put up on these boards in the rooms. And so I just went through looking at them, trying to get a sense for the children because I couldn't speak with them directly. There was a lot of religious imagery, which struck me, sketches of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, quotes saying things like, if you're ever sad, just remember that God loves you.
And are the kids involved in or taking part in any Bible study or any religious services?
I'm not sure if they get religious classes, but I do know that their daily routine includes 6 hours of educational programming, and that includes some sketching classes, that includes reading. They also get 2 hours of recreation a day, one structured and one unstructured. One thing that struck me was the children are only allowed to use the phones twice a week for 10 minutes, and the calls are supervised. And because an increasing number of these children are children who have been separated from their parents at the border, I asked them if they had had any trouble facilitating those conversations, and they were kind of reluctant to go there. And they just said that the case managers did their best to put the kids in touch with their parents.
That was KPBS's Jean Guerrero.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. Artist Works. Bluegrass players can learn from internationally recognized artists Tony Trischka, Mike Marshall, and Brian Sutton, and more at artistworks.com/bluegrass. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org.
And I should mention, we are still on hold with the number we received from the Department of Homeland Security as who to call to find family members. Some of the children in these facilities have been in traumatic circumstances already. That got us wondering how what's taking place at the border may affect children over time. We checked in with a doctor to hear a medical perspective. KQED's Polly Stryker spoke with Dr. Colleen Kraft, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics.
So when children are separated from a loving and caring parent and a caregiver with whom they've trusted and bonded, it can cause irreparable harm to their brain. And the younger the child is, and the longer they've been separated, the more damage occurs. What we're doing to these young children by separating them from their parents is a type of physiology called toxic stress. And toxic stress is very different from positive stress in that these same hormones, the cortisol, the fight or flight hormones, become high in this child's brain and in this child's body. But there is no loving caregiver to help buffer this. And these children wind up with developmental delays because of the toxic stress in their brain.
I understand that you went into a government shelter for immigrant children along the Texas border.
Yes, I did. I went in and saw one of the shelters that was redesigned for very young children. And the first thing I experienced was a very young child. I don't think this child was 2 years old, who was just sobbing and beating her little hands on the ground. And there was a staff member sitting next to her. She was not allowed to hold her or pick her up. And we all felt so helpless because we knew that what this child needed was her mother.
You were quoted in the press as saying that you felt like this was government-sanctioned child abuse. That's a powerful thing to say, and I wonder if, is this something reportable? Like, it's the government, so who do you tell?
The best thing that we can do is talk about what we observe and essentially assess it as what it is. These are children being separated from their parents. And this contradicts everything that we know about building child health. And when this is done in an intentional sort of way, what is it if it's not abuse?
So you consider this to be child abuse?
Systematically sanctioned child abuse, yes.
That was KQED's Polly Stryker talking with the president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, Dr. Colleen Kraft. As for that number we were told to call to find family members, we've been on hold this entire time. And for kids or parents in detention with a limited amount of phone time, a long hold may pose a problem. I don't know, and my questions about that have not yet been answered. And that's the California Report for Monday, June 18th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson.
And in El Paso, I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.